of the deities, which is all right. Because Krishna is not a devotee, he doesn't follow Ekadashi. Except when he appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little boy, he was at home, it was Ekadashi day, because the Shastras say that you only have to follow Ekadashi something like between 8 and 80. So I'm just waiting. A few more years, you know. 8 and 80. It was before he was 8 years old. And he was crying. And he said, when his parents asked him, why are you crying? He said, because I want to eat the offering that was made by Jagadish and Haranya in their house. And so they were thinking, you know, how does he know these things? So they took him to Jagadish and Haranya's house. They were two brothers, actually. And they found the offering, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate the offering. That's one of the first stories I know about Jagadish Pandit. Of course, Jagadish Pandit and his brother Haranya are sometimes considered to be incarnations or manifestations of the Nagapatnis. Nagapatnis means the wives of the serpent Kaliya. Nagapatni. Patni means wife, Naga means snake, wife of the snake. So, and other times they're considered like dancers. There's another explanation of some of the other charges that there was. Chandra Haas, who was a dancer who took great pleasure to dance in front of Lord Krishna. So these are some of the stories about them. And let's see, another story is that, oh yeah, Jagadish had a deity that he would carry behind him with a stick. He'd carry him on a stick. Anyway. And he worshipped eternally the Gaura Gopal deities. And these Gaura Gopal deities are worshipped even to this day. That's about all the information we had about Jagadish Pandit. Jagadish passed away on this particular day. So today is also the disappearance commemoration of Srila Jiva Goswami. And of course, Srila Jiva Goswami is one of the most important personalities in our Vaishnava Sampradaya, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, because Jiva Goswami was the, we would say, the most erudite scholar, practically the most erudite scholar of all time. And he's recognized as such. There's departments in different universities in India that are named after Jiva Goswami. He was the most, we would say, the most systematic in his writings and his studies of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Systematic, what I mean by systematic, it's not that the other devotees weren't systematic, but Jiva Goswami, in his, particularly his work called the Shatsandarbha, the Six Sandarbhas, he starts off, before he explains any philosophy of Krishna consciousness or any basic philosophy, he starts off in the Tattva Sandarbha describing what's called epistemology, which is really important, because if you're going to establish, if you're actually going to establish a philosophy, first of all, you have to establish where you get your knowledge from. You know, epistemology basically means the study of knowledge. You know, how do you know what you know? So Srila Jiva Goswami started off the night, and ISKCON has actually published this Tattva Sandarbha with the commentary of Jiva Goswami himself that was translated by Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. And so in this Tattva Sandarbha, he establishes definitely that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the source par excellence of knowledge. And he establishes Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the preeminent source of knowledge from which we derive our whole philosophy. And of course, Bhagavad Gita too. So, and then he goes on to establish the other Sandarbhas. He establishes the Paramatma Sandarbha, how the Lord is in the heart, and how, what the position of the living entity is, and there's the Priti Sandarbha. Anyway, so he is all the way up to the point of absolute pure love of God. It systematic means he actually builds up the foundation of epistemology and then talks about all the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Sambandha, and then Abhideya, and then Prayojana. in a very systematic fashion in the Sandarbhas. Sometimes it's considered that there's a seventh Sandarbha, which is called the Krama Sandarbha, which is not part of the original six. And this seventh Sandarbha, the Krama Sandarbha, is Jiva Goswami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So which Srila Prabhupada utilized when he wrote his Bhaktivedanta commentaries. So that's the Krama, called the Krama, K-R-A-M-A, Sandarbha. So then as far as Jiva Goswami's life, I mean, he was a very prolific author. Let's see how many, 400,000 verses he wrote. And when we're talking about verses, we're talking basically about poetry verses. Because when the Acharyas, especially the six Goswamis, wrote literature, they wrote it in poetry. And it's not like some of the fifth canto that we've been reading, it's in prose. But just about all the Goswamis' literature is very poetic. That means it rhymes, it's in proper meter. And you have, especially Srila Rupa Goswami, his poetic expressions are so amazing that he's written some poems that you can read backwards and they read the same. Have you heard about this before?
Yeah.
And some poems that if you take the different syllables of the Sanskrit words, they form a chakra, a wheel, some form of drum, and they read in different ways, and reading backwards and forwards the same way. It's pretty amazing. Rupa Goswami is the foremost of all the poetic Goswamis. Anyway, so as far as Jiva Goswami's life or pastimes is concerned, Jiva Goswami is known to be the son of Anupama. Anupama is the third brother, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Anupama. And Anupama, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also the Chaitanya Bhagavat, was a devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And he was very, very dedicated. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami tried to convince him to stop worshipping Lord Ramchandra exclusively and to worship Krishna. And Anupama couldn't change. He was just so dedicated. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that, he glorified the loyalty and dedication of Anupama in the same way that he glorified the loyalty and dedication of Murari Gupta, who is considered to be Hanuman. Because he said, how glorious it is if a servant doesn't neglect his master, and how glorious it is, this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the master doesn't neglect the servant. So this sort of loyalty or chastity is very, very important. So, Anupama, he was the father of Srila Jiva Goswami, and Anupama passed away on the way to Vrindavan. Actually, on the way to Jagannath Puri, And, Jiva Goswami was left in the care of his relatives, and he was always thinking how to, join Rupa and Sanatan, so he was always thinking of how to join his uncles in Vrindavan, because his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan, had been given Vrindavan to live in, not only to live in, of course, but to establish the places of Krishna's pastimes, build temples, and to Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano, Sadharma Samstapako, to establish the eternal religious principles, to peruse all the Vedic literatures, and actually all the literatures of the world, because Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were highly educated not only in Sanskrit, Bengali, but in Persian, Urdu, and so many other languages they were educated. So they actually were aware of the Quran, they were aware of the Bible, they were aware of, all the prominent religious literatures they were aware of. And so they were given the duty by Lord Chaitanya to come up with the essential Dharma. The Dharma means the essential aspects which cannot be separated, the eternal nature of religion. I mean, there's some things that are non-eternal aspects of religion, certain rituals, for example. And, of course, we've mentioned that before in relationship to Krishna West, that there's certain things that we do that are not eternal. I mean, the dhoti is not eternal. Neither are pants eternal. These are simply external formalities that help one remember who he or she is, and also develop a sense of identification with a particular organization. It's interesting. I mean, in every organization, there's certain common denominators, things that everybody in the organization does to mark themselves as members of the organization. Like if you're a member of Hell's Angels, then you put certain tattoos on you, right? And if you're a Mason, does anyone know how Masons identify each other? Yeah, the ring. They have a Masonic ring. It has like a, it's like a little pendulum or something on it. And, yeah, it's a compass. They, yeah, and then they show it, and they say, "Brother." And other, and other organizations that do a high five or your special, what, secret handshake? Secret handshake, like that. Oh, mudra or something like that. So, but these things are not eternal. Even in our Krishna conscious movement, these things are not eternal. You know, Dodi and the other things like that. They're relative things that help us. They're actually, we're not saying they're not necessary. We're not saying that they're not good, but they help us remain, you know, help us with a sense of identification. Like Prabhupada talked about a dhoti, like a uniform, policeman's uniform. Of course, sometimes policemen are in plain clothes too, especially nowadays. So anyway, those are non-eternal aspects. Every religion or every culture has non-eternal aspects to it. I mean, just like, and so if one wants to preach religion or understand religion, one has to be able to distinguish between the eternal and the non-eternal aspects of the religion. Very, very important. Otherwise, if one gets stuck on the non-eternal, that's like Niyamagraha. You know, you're just like, you're taking temporary things to be eternal, which is kind of stupid anyway. Anyway, so getting to the point, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, specifically Nana Shastra Vichara Naikanipanosa Dharma Samstapako, they were given that duty by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Jiva Goswami, he wanted to join his uncles, but he was very, very young at that time. And so his mother, because his father had passed away, his mother and other relatives said, you know, you can't go. And so he developed a trick. Many times we see that when one wants to renounce things, there's sort of a trick. You know, the trick that, like, anyway, there's so many examples like that. Prabhupada actually said when he renounced, it was a trick too. He just told his wife he was just going away. He said, I'm leaving. And she heard it so many times, she said, okay, I understand, you're just leaving. So, Jiva Goswami told his parents, at least his mother and others, that he was going to visit his ancestral home. Ancestral home means where your predecessors or ancestors were born. I mean, just like if I were to say, I want to go to, let's see, where's my ancestral home? It's not Israel, don't worry. I want to go to Germany and visit my ancestral, you know, roots. Everybody knows what roots are. Nowadays they do this genetic analysis so you can determine. You know, people are just so enthusiastic to find out where their bodies or their ancestors' bodies came from, which is kind of stupid anyway. What if they come out with a dog or something like that? So anyway, Jiva Goswami made that excuse. I'm going to my ancestral home. And then he snuck away to Mayapur. And when he was in Mayapur, who did he actually meet? What? But Lord Nityananda. That's very fortunate. And Lord Nityananda took him all around Mayapur, took him on the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, and he even took him to see Sachi Mata, who was still there at that time, in Vishnupriya, and he got the blessings from Sachi Mata in Vishnupriya. And then he was told by Lord Nityananda that you should go to Vrindavan and join your uncles, but on the way you should stop in Benares. So normally, a Vaishnava is not so much interested in going to Benares. Why not? Because Benares is a place of Mayavadis. It's not a place. I mean, there are some Vaishnavas there, but it's really not something that's a relishable place. You know, everybody's going around saying, Aham Brahmasmi, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. It's kind of frustrating. And so the reason he was told to go there was that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother, Madhusudana Vachaspati, was there. And Madhusudana Vachaspati, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was a very educated person in Sanskrit and all sorts of hermeneutics, and yeah, I mean all the different branches of philosophy. So Jiva Goswami needed some instruction in those things. Even though he's an Nichisiddha devotee, still an Nichisiddha devotee appears to accept instruction from someone in this world, like even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He accepted instruction from his guru. He took initiation from Keshava Bharati. And also from Ishwarapur. Keshava Bharati, of course, was his sannyas guru. And even Lord Krishna, he accepted a guru and Sandapani Muni. And he even gave his guru Dakshin. He brought his guru's son back from the death. So then Jiva Goswami accepted as a Siksha guru, Madhusudana Vachaspati, and he took instruction in Sanskrit, grammar, rhetoric, and all the other subject matters that would be important for him later on in life. And then after that, he proceeded to Vrindavan. And when he went to Vrindavan initially, he asked Sanatana Goswami for initiation. Sanatana Goswami was the eldest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Actually, before the six Goswamis of Vrindavan went there, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Lokanath Goswami to prepare the ground for them. Lokanath and Bhugarbha Goswami. So in one sense, Lokanath Goswami is a Goswami, but he's not one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, but he's on that same level. So then Jiva Goswami approached Sanatana Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami deferred the position of initiation or being the guru of Jiva Goswami to Rupa Goswami. So then he approached Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami wanted to make sure that Jiva Goswami was qualified, not only educationally wise, but like we hear in the Vedic literatures, Samit Pani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, that education, in other words, knowing the philosophy is just one aspect of discipleship. Samit Pani, of course, means to bring water, firewood or water for the spiritual master, be a humble servant. Shrotriyam must have heard nicely, and Brahmanishtam, never deviating from the process of Krishna consciousness. Actually, I was just, we were just talking in the car yesterday about in the Mahabharata story, how this one guru, he would test his disciples by, in horrendous ways. One way he tested, one disciple was too fat. And he told his disciple, take care of the cows. And so the disciple went, he thought the disciple would lose some weight because he gets some sunshine and exercise. So he went out and he kept getting fatter. And it turned out the disciple was begging and took the opportunity of being out there to beg, and he was just eating everything. And then the guru said, no, you have to offer everything to me first. And then he still kept getting fat after that. And the disciple revealed his mind that he was eating when he begged the second time. First time he offered to the guru, second time he offered to himself. And then the guru said, no, every time you have to offer to me. And then he kept getting fat. And the guru said, you know, why are you still getting fat? And fatter and fatter and fatter. And the disciple revealed that he was drinking the milk from the cows that he was taking care of. And the guru said, no, that milk is meant for the calves. But then still the disciple kept getting fat. And the guru said, what are you doing now? And the disciple revealed that he was drinking the froth when the calves would drink from the udder, of the cow, that then they would lose some from froth from their mouths like that. And he was drinking that, so not really, he must have spent the whole day drinking froth to get fat. I mean, it takes a lot of froth to put on weight. So then the guru said, no, the calves are being merciful to you, but you're taking something that actually belongs to them. So stop, you can't eat without my permission. And actually that's one of the trainings traditionally the disciple gets in the guru's ashram, that he's not allowed to come and eat unless the guru calls him. It's interesting. Nowadays they just record the sound of the guru's voice and play it on their iPhone. Anyway, come eat, okay. So in any case, eventually this person got so hungry that he couldn't control himself, this disciple, the guru, that he ate some leaves from this poisonous plant and he became blind. And then he fell in a well. And he didn't come back that night, and the other disciples of the guru were looking for him, you know, where is, you know, wherever his name was. And they found him in a hole in the ground, a well. And the guru told him, he said, just stay there and pray to the Ashwini Kumaris. They'll help and solve your problem and restore your eyesight. So he prayed to the Ashwini Kumaris. The Ashwini Kumaris came with some medicinal bread or cake. And they said, take this and you'll actually regain your eyesight. And he said, no, I can't take it because I don't have my guru's permission. So he learned the lesson. You know, so strict he was. So anyway, so what happened after that point, then he was blessed by the Ashwini Kumaris, he got back his eyesight, and he lived happily ever after. But when he took disciples, he was so traumatized. He was so traumatized by what his guru had done to him, that he was so lenient, his disciples just ran all over him. Anyway, actually there's two things happen. If you're traumatized like that, sometimes you become like the same thing. And sometimes you react and become the opposite. You become just very lenient. No, I'm not going to chastise any disciple. Anyway, so it's the guru's business to test the disciple. And we see this in many cases. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was tested by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And finally came back after 3 or 4 times threatening to kill himself unless Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj would give him initiation. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, all right, I'll give you initiation. So there's many tests like that. So the guru tests the disciple tests the guru. Anyway, Jiva Goswami was tested by Śrīla Rūpa Goswami. And he was tested by he was given very menial service to do. Menial service means, you know, cleaning up the place where the guru bathes, relieves himself, cooking, scrubbing. You know, just very menial service. And actually, this is an important part of Krishna consciousness, understanding that one is a servant. We have, sometimes people join our movement, and it's very hard for them to understand that point, that they're a servant, because they may come from, let's say, so-called high-class families, and they think, what, me? Clean the toilets? And actually, usually the first thing we do when someone joins the Hare Krishna movement is we send them to clean the pots in the kitchen. And then also clean the bathroom and everything. And that's good training. That's actually very good training, because then one realizes, you know, that they're not a Brahmin. They're actually Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasanu Dasa. I mean, that's really an important philosophical understanding. If you don't understand that, you're not going to make any spiritual advancement. If you think you're a great devotee or advanced or a high-class family, Janmaishwari, Shutashri, Shubhira, Mana, Dapaman, that you're very attractive, very educated, then how can you make spiritual advancement? How can you chant the holy names? Tridatapi Sunijina. So, anyway. So, Jiva Goswami was tested. Eventually, Rupa Goswami did give him initiation. And he was trained up by Śrīla Rūpa Goswami. There's some interesting stories. One story I'll tell in a second. And Jiva Goswami was instrumental also in getting many of the temples of the Goswamis constructed. And the way he did that was that he was such a great scholar that the emperor Akbar, of course, was a very liberal emperor. He was Mughal, which is interesting. But he was so liberal, he was trying to get everybody together. In fact, he would have meetings practically on a daily basis with different religious leaders from different sects, Muslim sects and Hindu sects, and trying to come up with some particular system of belief or religion that everybody could accept, try to bring out. He was like a mediator. And of course, his grandchild was not such a nice guy. Does anyone know who his grandchild was? Aurangzeb. And his son fell in love. But that's a different story. So anyway, so what happened is that he was so impressed with Jiva Goswami, and it's described also that he met Mirabai too. He was very impressed with Mirabai, and he was just very impressed with the teachers of the Goswamis, and he had it. It's described that he went to Nidiban. Nidiban is like a garden of rest for Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And then he had a vision. Somehow or other, he had a spiritual vision of Radha and Krishna. Anyway, and then he was guided by Jiva Goswami to construct some of the temples in Vrindavan, the Goswami temples in Vrindavan. Many of them were not not finished when the Goswamis were there. In other words, when Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were there, and Jiva Goswami supervised the finishing of these particular temples. And of course, you have some temples that were torn down by, at least partially torn down by Aurangzeb later on, like Radha Govindaji temple was torn down. So, anyway, getting back to the story. So Jiva Goswami, he was very important in that respect, in addition to, all the literature he wrote. And, there was another interesting story about Jiva Goswami that involves a test, given to him by Rupa Goswami. Once upon a time, this pundit came, Rupa Narayan Saraswati. Saraswati is like a Brahminical name or a pundit name. So he came to Vrindavan to challenge the Goswamis of Vrindavan to a debate. In those days, in Vrindavan, instead of playing cricket, they had the competition. Now it's cricket. I mean, if you walk around Govardhan, there's actually cricket fields all around Govardhan. And people sit on the samadhis of great Vaishnavas to watch the cricket games. It's terrible. Anyway, so, of course, we shouldn't criticize the Vrajabhasis. So, in any case, in those days, if someone wanted to have a game, it was more or less a philosophical game. They would come and challenge someone to a debate, and if they could defeat the person in debate, they got this thing called the Jaya Patra, which means a victory certificate. Patra means like paper certificate. So this Rupa Narayan Saraswati came and he challenged Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And Rupa and Sanatana Goswami didn't really want to waste their time arguing with this materialistic person. So instead of wasting their time, they just signed the Jaya Patra immediately. Said, okay, you won, so please leave here. You know, you won, leave us alone, you gotta chant Hare Krishna. So, they signed it, and he was so proud of this certificate, this Rupa Narayan Saraswati, he's going all around bragging, showing everybody the certificate, I've defeated Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Finally, he came to Jiva Goswami, and he said, look, I defeated your uncles! And Jiva Goswami got really angry at that point. And he said, well, would you like to have a little talk, a little debate? So for about, I think, 6 or 7 days, he debated with Rupa Narayan Saraswati, and it's described that Rupa Narayan Saraswati was soundly defeated, probably had a call of nature during the whole debate, and ran out of Vrindavan, never to be seen again. And so Jiva Goswami went to Rupa Goswami and he started bragging. He said, look, I defeated this guy. I really taught him a lesson. You know, he just ran out like with his tail between his legs. And Rupa Goswami got upset at Jiva Goswami. Not so much because he had defeated him, but because he was bragging about having defeated him. I mean, actually, Jiva Goswami did the right thing in defeating this person, because if a Vaishnava is offended, someone speaks some nonsense against a Vaishnava or claims to be more intelligent than a Vaishnava, it's our duty to become like fire, Prabhupada said, to defend that Vaishnava. So Jiva Goswami did absolutely the right thing, but bragging about it is a different thing. So one won't brag about things. I mean, a humble devotee shouldn't be bragging about things. Like we talked the other day about the gopis, when they were describing their desire to be with Krishna in the conjugal ras, they were just simply attributing it to lust. You know, so, oh yeah, we want to enjoy ourselves, this, and that. And they were very reluctant to attribute it to, oh, we just want to please you. They did say that from time to time. But basically, they did speak a lot, you know, please, we have this burning sensation in our breasts, you know, touch your feet to them and put out the burning sensation, you know, which is a lusty expression. So devotees naturally are humble, even if they're successful at something. They're humble or else Krishna will teach them a lesson. I remember in the early days of the movement, I wasn't humble. But I remember in the early days, one time I was distributing a lot of Prabhupada's books and I went bragging to devotees that, you know, I can distribute a book to anybody I want. Yeah, I just actually bragged. And of course the other devotees started laughing at me. And I got so upset, I said, just watch. And then for the next 5 hours, nobody even stopped to give me the time of the day. So Krishna teaches us lessons. As soon as we get prideful, Krishna cuts down our pride in different ways. So you always have to maintain our humility. So Jiva Goswami is chastised by Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, look, you're not qualified. You took sannyas. You're not qualified to be a sannyasi. Because, you know, a sannyasi has to be extremely humble. Really? I didn't know that. Anyway, so sannyasi has to be extremely humble. And abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga bhavastatihi. Always free from fear. There's other qualities. This is from Bhagavad Gita, of course. Abhaya, which means free from fear. Sattva samshuddhi, established in the sattva guna, established in the truth. And then jnana yoga bhavastatihi. He has to be connected to Krishna. Through study of Vedic literature, study of Krishna Katha. So this is very important quality. So Jiva Goswami was told by Rupa Goswami, you're not qualified to be a sannyasi, so just get out of Vrindavan. So he left Vrindavan, and for months he was living in the hollow of a tree in Mathura. And so, you know, poor Jiva Goswami, but this is the lesson. And then what happened is that Sanatana Goswami went to Rupa Goswami and said, where is Jiva? I haven't seen him for a while. And Rupa Goswami said, you know, I have to chastise him, you know, he was too proud. And Sanatana Goswami said to Rupa Goswami, there are certain precepts of our master that you haven't properly applied or learned. And Rupa Goswami said, which precepts? He strained his mind thinking, you know, what am I not applying? What have I not learned? And finally, he came across the point by the pushings or proddings of Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Doya. He said, recite Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Jiva Doya is one of them. Jiva Doya means compassion for the Jiva souls, but it can also be taken as compassion for Jiva, Jiva Goswami, Jiva, Jiva Goswami. Jiva soul means the individual soul, which basically that's us. So Rupa Goswami laughed when he understood this, and he called Jiva Goswami back, and then Jiva Goswami remained there with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And of course he was younger, so he was there after Rupa and Sanatana Goswami passed away. And he also associated a lot with Raghunath Das Goswami, who was the acharya in Radhakund, who helped establish Radhakund. And Jiva Goswami also, when Raghunath Das Goswami passed away, he continued Raghunath Das Goswami's work. Jiva Goswami's own temple is the Radha Damodara temple, which incidentally, our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, made his eternal home. Prabhupada's rooms are still there, in the Radha Damodara temple. Prabhupada's rooms are still there in the Radha Damodara temple, and the devotees go there and worship. Of course, there is a little controversy about who owns the rooms at this particular point, but devotees go there and worship Prabhupada. And that's also at the Radha Damodara temple. The Goswamis would meet regularly and discuss philosophical topics in the back of the temple there. And there's samadhis of many great personalities, Kushrupa Goswami, at the Radha Damodara temple. It's one of the main, most important temples, perhaps the most important temple in Vrindavan for us to visit of the Goswami's temples, because it's Srila Prabhupada's eternal residence. So, I think that's all the information I have about Jiva Goswami. Any questions or comments? We have about a half minute left.
What's the instance where the disciple is testing the
group? The disciple is testing the group by observation. Observation and questions. It's not that the disciples stick pins in the guru to see if the guru's on the Brahma Bhuta platform. You know, it has to be done with the proper etiquette. It's not to do insult the guru to see if he's free, like Brigham Muni insulted Lord Brahma, and he insulted Lord Shiva to see who was in the mode of goodness. And he insulted Krishna by kicking him in the chest. So it's not that you kick the guru in the chest to see if he's established in Sattva Guru. So it's by observation. What is that observation? Samit Pani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. See, if the guru is a servant of his spiritual master, if he has heard from his guru, his spiritual master, and repeating the words, and also not falling down. You know, if you see a guru go into the liquor store, he's not Lord Nityananda. What does they say? I won't be dissuaded from my conviction of Lord Nityananda's supreme personality of Godhead, even if he goes to the liquor store.